This is Raphael Pope Sussman with the Center for Court Innovation. This podcast is part of a series of dispatches from the Court's Community Engagement and Innovative Practices in a Changing Landscape Symposium held in Anaheim in December 2015. The conference focused on justice reforms, including recent developments in California. I hope you enjoy listening. Hi, this is Raphael Pope Sussman of the Center for Court Innovation, and we're here at the Courts Community Engagement and Innovative Practices in a Changing Landscape Conference in Anaheim. Right now I'm sitting down with Chief Eric Jones of the Stockton Police Department to talk about the work he's doing. Chief Jones, thank you for joining me today, and welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, talk about the changes you've seen in how police approach the communities they serve across your career.
Yeah, so I think we're really at what some describe as a watershed moment in law enforcement, which is, you know, we're at a pivot point, we're at a historical point. A lot of it is attributed to, you name it, but really a lot of it's around Ferguson, even though a lot of what we've been doing was prior to that. We're already working on a lot of things. You know, here's the best illustration I think I have as to why we have to change the way we do law enforcement. And it's based on research and data. Over the last two decades, we've seen, overall across the country, steady declines in crime and violent crime. So even though we have spikes now and again, overall, over 20 years, we've seen that decline. And one would think, and I think we all assumed in law enforcement, that would mean that the confidence in police would be going up. So as a community is seeing, you know, these reductions in violent crime in their communities, they have more confidence in their police force. However, we've seen that the United States' confidence in police departments has remained steady. No improvement. So what that tells us is that it's not necessarily what we do, it's how we do it. And that's where procedural justice comes into play. It's not the fact that we're reducing violent crime, it's how are we doing it? Are we doing it with what's been called stop and frisk, blanket enforcement, zero tolerance? Well, that can reduce crime, but we've found it also comes at great cost with community trust. So with this data and really understanding this, and us now in law enforcement acknowledging the historical perspective policing has had across our country, especially in communities of color, it's moving us in the right direction with how we interact with our communities and the fact we need our communities' help to reduce crime. We can't reduce crime at the expense of our communities.
You spoke very explicitly in the panel about issues of race and having to confront the history of race in America, and particularly the relationship between police and people of color. Can you describe for our audience how that fits into your vision for the work that you do?
Yeah, so it comes up, and I guess we speak about this in the historical place policing has had in America. We speak about it both internally within the department with our police officers, so they understand it, and we speak about it outside the department at our community forums. We have some discussions going on called Courageous Conversations, talking about racial reconciliation and race relations issues really head-on. And there's no way to bridge this kind of divide of two different narratives as if there have to be two different narratives and one narrative is correct, you know, law enforcement or the community. That can't be. We're not going to get anywhere. So one thing what a lot of us have done in law enforcement is just acknowledging this historical policing in America. What I mean by that, and this is what we discuss with our officers, is that we have to at least acknowledge it, because we do carry the burden of it when we put our badge on. It comes with our career. So over, you know, going back numerous decades, police officers they're the enforcement part of the government. And if there are laws that provide for racial disparity or even atrocities, the police are the ones that enforce the law of the land. So really kind of an extreme example, but it's true, is that many, many years ago, police officers were used to keep lynchings, quote unquote, civil. They were actually dispatched there to keep the crowd under control for a horrible atrocity. These things actually happen, and as we go through to the Jim Crow laws and things like that. So we have to acknowledge that that is what law enforcement did. And the reason we have to acknowledge it is within, especially communities of color, that history is very much a part of how their lenses, how they view police. and they've heard stories from their parents or grandparents, but those stories permeate down. And so it's important for us to have that dialogue and at least acknowledge it. And that is quite a bit of a paradigm shift for law enforcement. We really don't see that necessarily all the time. But it's something we're recognizing and understanding, and we think as part of procedural justice and police legitimacy, which is where the community views their police department as legitimate or not, we have to have that as part of the dialogue to at least take that barrier down, acknowledge it, and then move the discussion forward. It's very important.
How could those practices or lessons be brought to police departments across the country?
I think we're seeing it move. And it's, you know, the law enforcement across the country, it's like a big ship freighter out in the ocean. It's not going to turn on a dime. It's a slow move. And you're seeing law enforcement leaders who get this. They're beginning to understand it through a variety of ways, whether it be this national initiative on community trust and justice, through the president's 21st Century Policing Task Force. And the bottom line is the data is telling us how the communities feel about us and why. So really, if we're going to be all about evidence-based and data-driven, we have to look at the data. For example, implicit bias, the fact that it exists, and the fact that we have to acknowledge that and have better training for it. We're just really starting to look more at the evidence and then have best practices be linked to those. We have to partner with our academic researchers. That's the bottom line, because they're able to bring us the data that show us the studies. And one example is we've had several really highly acclaimed academics present to police chiefs and sheriffs. And then when they see it, when you see the data, whether it be on why procedural justice works, the surveys is to actually police officers want it. They crave it. They want this type of training because it reminds them as to why they signed up to do the job. They see the data on implicit bias, then they'll take it back to their department. So I think the single best thing we can do is rely upon our academic researchers to provide us the data we need and to also evaluate the things we're doing to make sure it's working. I've noticed that, for example, I was surprised when we brought implicit bias procedural justice training to our department. Our officers rated it the highest course they've ever been through. And that was a little bit surprising. It's a touchy subject, but we found that, for example, some of the feedback was, thank you for reminding me why I signed up to do the job. Because, see, cynicism sets in law enforcement, and it's a fact, and we know why. They see things none of us should ever have to see, and they see it day in, day out. They see the worst in humans, and they are dealing with that 3% of the population that commits the majority of crime. And they begin to paint the other 97% of the population the same way. And it takes work to combat that cynicism and to recalibrate why we signed up for the job and the fact that there are good people out there.
Going back to the work you're doing with the National Initiative for Building Community Trust and Justice, what does that involve?
It's a 3-year project. And we're actually fortunate because I was mentioning academic researchers, we're really getting the best in the field from John Jay College on Criminal Justice, UCLA, Yale, and they're actually coming in and taking a look at our police department. They chose the various pilot sites on a number of reasons: population, geography, challenges, the fact that there were some challenges, there were communities of color, there was high crime, but they also saw that, okay, we have some law enforcement agencies here that appear to have the capacity and the desire to make some changes in the areas we're talking about. They come in and they'll analyze our data. They do community surveys. They're talking to the community, find out how do they feel about their police department. They're doing interviews with our police staff. They're getting a gauge on what the issues are and how we can better connect the police and the community. So even though we feel like we've done a lot of really cutting-edge progressive things, I think that they're going to bring to the table some other things, because we can always learn from one another. For example, the 6 pilot sites. Some of the other pilot sites might be doing some things that we can really use, and vice versa. It's about sharing best practices and opening our doors and being transparent to how we do business component.
Just my last question, what's your greatest fear with all of this?
Greatest fear? I would say something I worry about every day is the next big incident and whether it's going to happen in my jurisdiction. And when I mean big incident, I think we all know what we're talking about. Kind of the elephant in the room is, when is there going to maybe be another high-profile case of something caught on video? You know, we do this trust-building work all the time. And we, in Stockton, for example, have over 1,000 police contacts per day. Every day, somebody resists a police officer's arrest in Stockton, just Stockton. I mean, it's a dangerous and challenging job. But I worry about two things. That one incident that may get some sort of national attention that might then bring, whether people have all the facts or not, might bring, you know, some sort of civil unrest or other issues. I don't wish that upon any jurisdiction. On the same note, my fear is that an officer will be so concerned about the national dialogue and doesn't want to be that officer on a video that they actually get themselves hurt or killed. That's a concern of mine too. I want the officer to do their job professionally, but if they have to use force legally, I want them to use it. So I worry about those two things day in and day out.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Raphael Pope-Sussman of the Center for Court Innovation, and I've been speaking with Chief Eric Jones of the Stockton Police Department. For more information on the Center for Court Innovation, visit www.courtinnovation.org.